Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the 99th episode of Star Chamber. I'm your host tonight, Daniel Dark, along with Mr. Stephen Zimmer and the return of Her Majesty, Hollerin' Holly Marie Phillippe.
Yeah.
We're talking tonight about designing the story, plotting and pantsing and everything in between. So how's it going, everybody?
It's going good.
Back.
It's exciting. It's a cold night here in Lexington, Kentucky. Definitely glad we're indoors. So we're all ready to go for the show, and it's going to be a good one tonight. Really looking forward to this discussion. And Holly is back.
Yeah, we've got Holly back tonight, and she can blast in there for us. So.
Yes, I'm going to be quiet now, let me tell you what. No, I tell you what, I was sicker than I've ever been in my life. I have that crazy disease, COPD, and got this nasty respiratory thing going on and a virus. And, yeah, I was down for 2 weeks. It was rough. It was rough. But, yeah, I'm back. I'm back and ready.
Back
so we're
going to
have
ready.
A good That's... show tonight. That's right.
Yep.
And David
well,
Sheridan
you know,
joined us in the chat room.
We've got the chat room open for anybody that wants to come in and chat with us. And also, you know, got the call-in line, too. So if you've got a question or have something to say to us and everything, please give us a call in so that we can get everything on the air and get everything answered tonight. State of the world and everything. Guys, give us a little bit of an update on the environment of the business at this point in time. I know a lot of things have changed this week, along with everything else that we've been hearing about over the last couple of months. So y'all keep up with it a whole lot better than I do. So give us a little bit of that environment and what we can expect over the next little bit with, you know, whether authors or, you know, publishers and everything else.
Sure. Well, one thing is that on the Star Chamber show and also on the vlog that Holly and I do, the Creative's Cauldron, we have been tracking this pattern. And it's a pattern of big sites that are doing things that really hurt small independent creatives, people like authors, filmmakers, musicians, et cetera. And we've talked about a number of them, from Goodreads to Facebook to YouTube and all that. And in the last week, there have been two more incidents of this. And one was a new Facebook announcement where they have talked about a change in the algorithm that basically decides what you see. And they've stated quite openly that they are going to downplay pages, not profiles, but they are going to downplay some things about profiles. So be careful about that. But they are going to reduce the amount of times that pages are seen. And they, you know, they say, you know, to reduce business content in the newsfeed. Well, I mean, we're talking organizations, we're talking entertainment, things you like bands, music, movies, anything like that. Anything that has a page is affected by that. And so, and that's author pages, that's filmmaker pages, that's artist pages. All that stuff is affected. And so that's one of the two incidents we're going to briefly talk about. The other one is
Let me pipe in just real quick, there, Stephen. The key is Zuckerberg put out this big statement, and he says that Facebook was intended to be social for family and friends, and that it's good for our well-being to interact with family and friends and not be flooded with ads. But you could still get paid Facebook ads. But, you know, he don't want it running in the timelines, which, yeah, that's going to hurt a lot of people, because guess what? Our family and friends are, you know, also our customers, also people that want to know what's going on with our business, what new stuff's up, you know, and they want to see our stuff. That's why a lot of these friends that we have on Facebook, we don't even know, you know, real good personally. We've either met them at conventions or at shows or signings or book signings or whatever. And, you know, they become your friends just because they're a fan. They want to see, you know, what you're doing and things like that. And it's a shame that, you know, he's taken this away. But the key is, there's a little trick to it. If you comment, so the people, Kathy Jackson, I'm going to give her a shout out. Way to go, girl. She, every day she'll comment, right? Or she'll comment on somebody else's feed. The thing is, they said with the algorithms, you need to be commenting on people that you want to actually see their stuff more. So if you comment, like if I comment on Steven's stuff, I'm going to see Steven's stuff more. If I comment on Daniel's stuff, I'm going to see Daniel's stuff more. But if I don't comment on certain people's things, you know, I'm not going to see it. You can refresh the page and you see the same thing over and over and over. So that's the key, people, is comment on people's feeds if you want to keep seeing their stuff. So go ahead, David.
And then the other one is part two of this, and we just got our emails today on this. YouTube decided to make a nice sudden change. And as of February 20th, a whole lot of people that currently have monetized channels will no longer be monetized. And they've introduced a new bar that you have to hit in order to be officially monetized. You have to have like a minimum of 1,000 subscribers, or they said if you have over 4,000 hours of viewing by your audience in the last 30 days, you can continue to be monetized. But 1,000 subscribers is the new bar that they've set, and in doing so, they are demonetizing a whole lot of sites that previously, you know, had qualified for their 10,000 video view minimum to be a YouTube
Which
partner.
Was us.
And yeah, we were one of them because we haven't hit 1,000 subscribers yet on our channel. And so, we had hit the 10,000 view mark. And so we were one of those that are going to be demonetized unless we magically get, you know, a bunch of subscribers by then. And, you know, and like I said, you know, we're not making any kind of great money on this, but, you know, as far as that goes, but it's just the principle. And it's another example of a major site, you know, hurting the very base that propelled it. And help make YouTube, you know, a content-rich site that wasn't just, you know, random, you know, cat and baby videos, and, you know, actually had, you know, very innovative original programming done by anybody. And it's just really, it's annoying, it's frustrating, and it just continues the pattern that we've been watching on this show, and then on our other show, we've been tracking this, and we've done shows about it. But this pattern continues, and that's why we preach self-sufficiency as much as possible, and you know things that you control 100% that they can't change. Things like email newsletters, which they can't affect. Things like your personal website, which they can't affect. I mean, those are things that you know need to be emphasized more and more and more because, let's face it. I mean, you know, they're not your friend, and it's pretty clear at this point. And so anyway, I just want to give that update.
On the monetization, are they saying that you can't monetize anywhere or just on YouTube?
Well, I mean, if you have like Google Ads on your blog, I mean, you can still do that, and of course, and you know, that still counts. But as far as like YouTube, your YouTube channel, no, I mean, you won't be able to, have. You know, ads, monetized ads on your channel until now that you hit this new bar of 1,000 subscribers and then they'll review you again and all that stuff. And, they just kicked it down the street
they
a little farther
the
now.
Curb.
And, you know, if we finally make it to 1,000 subscribers, you know, probably 5 days after that, they'll announce the new low bar is 5,000 subscribers. You know, I mean, it's just like you cannot depend on them. It's not anything you can count on or, you know, I mean, we're certainly not going to stop. I mean, we're going to produce the content we've always produced and continue to improve it and grow it because we have a lot of reasons for doing it. But it's just really, you know, it's just really, really annoying to see them, you know, do things that hurt the base that made them who they are, frankly.
Yeah, because without people like us, guess what? They don't have content.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the things I was wondering is whether they were going to monitor your other things, whatever you had in your name, whether it was a Patreon page or anything like that, and if they saw that your monetization on that, they're going to kick you off of YouTube because of it. Or something
So. That's not affected.
No, no. Okay.
And actually, the thing is, the things like Patreon actually become more important now. And and Patreon increases in importance
because you control
like
that.
Because let's face it, if you have 500 or 600, 700 subscribers, you're getting thousands of views per month on their channel. And that's a pretty good little channel that you have running. And, that's not easy to do. It's not easy to build up. It takes time, a lot of effort. And, so things like Patreon are very justified now for people that are willing to support the content creators of shows they like. It's really important. And, so Patreon, thank God for Patreon. I mean, that's one thing that actually is working on behalf of the content creators. And it's just a matter
of
getting that message more to the public. Yeah.
Yeah, just don't become dependent on it.
Right.
They can change their rules, too. That's mm-hmm. just it. You know, you don't know. You can wake up one morning and, this is the new changes. I mean, just out of the blue, just like YouTube did to us this morning. It happens all the time. You just got to, try to keep up with them and stay one step ahead. And there's always a way around things. And that's why we say do not put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, diversify, without spreading thin. It's like fine art, but diversify your approach so you're not dependent on any one of these. And understand that you've got to develop, strength in things that you control 100%.
Right.
And I can't preach enough about the importance of, like I said, the newsletter, your website and things like that. And that's front and center. And the pattern is not going to end anytime soon. We just see it again and again and again.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And that's
right.
Why, like I said, just got to stay one step ahead.
So what are we looking at as going to be the new hot item that we'll be for Hot Channel to be doing besides Patreon?
Well, we're investigating a lot of things, but yes, Patreon is the best model at the moment. And
right now.
Holly might have some thoughts on that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the past couple of days, especially since this YouTube thing today, we've actually picked up a few people in our Goodreads, and I've had some comments, and I'm thinking, I don't know if that affected it or whatever, but since the Facebook thing, this week we've had more interaction on Goodreads. And I was looking, and a lot of these new people are people that just signed up for Goodreads. It'll tell you when they became a member, and a lot of them were in January of this year. So that's a curious thing. I was going to bring that up to Stephen earlier, forgot. But, it's very curious. I noticed that today. So I don't know if Goodreads is, it kind of fell to the wayside for a while, but we've always kept a presence there. I've always put things on there.
Yeah.
And our videos and new things and authors, what if they won awards or if they're, doing book signings. So I always keep everything updated. And if you're not a member, go to Seven Star Press on Goodreads and become a friend of ours, and we'll follow your stuff. But
anyway,
like I said, I have noticed, that there's people signing up this week. So it's curious, very curious.
Yep, there's a lot of people that are, it's a crazy time. It just changes by the week. So by next week, we
you
may have
to keep a small
new,
presence
new
everywhere,
Daniel.
Yep. And let me ask you one more question. If I'm not mistaken, isn't YouTube and Facebook the same company now?
YouTube's a Google-owned company.
Facebook
is a competitor. Facebook video could develop in a new direction that could compete eventually with YouTube. Who knows? And but again, with the way Facebook works, I don't trust them to come up with anything that's going to be too helpful. Unless you have money.
I don't trust Zuckerberg, no.
They don't mind business pages showing up in your newsfeed if you pay.
Right.
That's true.
I know several people that are using Facebook Live just like a business feed, though. So.
Yeah. And when we say business, it sounds so formal, but, I mean, we're talking – I mean, these are artist pages and all that, organizational pages,
yep.
I mean, groups. It's not like you're just going to get hit with a Toyota ad. I mean, we're talking, like, everything that's not a personal profile. That's what we're talking about being affected. And, and that's a really unfortunate thing. And I think Facebook's going to see a big drop in usage from this, and I really do. I think it's going to hurt them a bit. And we'll just have to see if they're stubborn.
Oh, yeah,
I think
they're never going to go away, but they're going to see a decrease in activity. Already backed away some, and I mean, I was a big Facebooker. Anybody knows that. But I've backed away. I'll check it, when I get up, and then like before I go to bed, I'll check. But I don't have that many notifications anymore. I used to have, if I didn't check it for a couple hours, I'd have 50 or 60 notifications. Now I'm getting that, in like a 12-hour period. So I've seen a big change just in my notifications and interactions. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like, I follow you and Steven all the time. And,
right.
Now I'm not even getting that. Because of the fact that they've changed the algorithms, and with my page, Daniel Dark Author, I've got over 1,000 followers on that page.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Most of my new stuff this week has 10, 12, 14 mm-hmm. people saw this post.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yep.
Because
they're choosing. They choose who sees your post and who don't.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah,
and it should not be that way.
They can say
like
what they want to about it being best for the family, best for the people and all that stuff. But bottom line, considering they've got where they're wanting you to pay for Facebook ads, it's better for their pocket.
You got it.
Yep.
It's getting to be communism.
Kenzie says in the chat room she loves Facebook, but she's been staying away due to negativity, which is true. There's been just so much negative on there. Of course, I've learned to kind of tune that out mentally when I go through Facebook. But it says she's noticed that she actually has to type certain names into the search button in order to see their posts, and that's just awful. I mean, it really is.
It's ridiculous.
I mean.
Well, my friends, I liked their post. That was inspirational stuff. I have a friend, Lori Ward. She may be listening. She listens sometimes. But I love Lori, and I love her.
This.
Yeah, I love her post. And I just
great
not seeing them anymore.
Great artist.
Oh, God, she's phenomenal.
Her artwork is phenomenal.
And,
love her posts. Love her posts. And
I know, and I'm not seeing them now. No. I go to her page or whatever. And I try to put out inspirational posts. I'll share a couple things, here and there that are memes that are inspirational and give people, inspiration for the day and stuff.
Right.
But heck, now nobody's seeing my stuff, and it's so irritating.
But here's the thing. I mean, we need more competitors. And like Twitter does have a competitor. They're called Gab, G-A-B. And Gab is a Twitter competitor that could be viable. And they're very dedicated to free speech and open discussion. So that means, yes, there is going to be some offensive speech on there. It will happen. And when you have free speech, has offensive speech. That's one of the ways in which you measure whether you're truly free or not, is if there is some offensive speech out there. But Gab is actually gated by Android and Apple because they won't carry Gab on their app stores. So they even get gated off at that level right now. It could change. But that's there's a real problem with this kind of thing. I mean, because even viable competitors, even get gated off at a level like that. And it's just it gets under my skin quite a bit. But
David shared and piped in and said there's something called MeWe, MeWe, and he said they're trying to compete against Facebook.
Hey, that's got
I'll have to check that out.
It's maybe maybe MeWe for Kenzie then. It's going to ring to it. I'll check that out.
That's something to check out.
I would love to see a competitor rise up. Yeah, cause I wish MySpace could resurrect even and come back. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, it's possible.
Competition always keeps people on their toes, and and that's why in the ebook market, it's good to have more than just Amazon out there. And competition is a good thing. So let's see. Let's hopefully we can see a few sprouts of that in the future. But they got to be viable. They got to be able to get on to Android and the Google Play Store, and they also got to be able to get on to the Apple iTunes Store. I mean that shouldn't even be a problem. But
right.
But unfortunately, it is. Yeah, with that. But I don't want to stick up the whole night with this discussion. But
no, we don't.
Daniel's got a hot topic.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, we've got a topic tonight that I believe anybody that is writing or doing anything when it comes to whether it's stage production, writing novels, writing books, or anything else will be interested in. Whether you're a plotter, you want to lay out everything that you can about something before you ever do anything, the blueprints of your book or writing, or whether you're a pantser like a lot of people that I know are, and you just want to fly by the seat of your pants and get there, this is the night for you to call in and talk to us about it and find out what we have to say about it and what you have to say about it. Me personally, I am a split decision. I do a little bit of plotting and a lot of pantsing. I don't know about Stephen and Holly over there, on how they do their books and stuff. I know Stephen's written a whole lot more books than I have. So, Stephen, let me let you take it off first.
Sure. You were wanting to talk about panzers, like German tanks? No, just kidding.
Uh-huh. God.
No,
you're in the wrong topic.
Joke.
Come back to the writing topics.
I'm kidding you. No, plotting and pantsing. I've always said that I'm kind of in plotting, being on one end of the spectrum, and then plotters, and then pantsers on the other end of the spectrum, and then you got kind of like everything in between. I would fall probably dead center between those two extremes, a pure plotter, a pure pantser, especially for my larger scale series, because I feel it's necessary to outline the core of the story, so your destination, direction it's going, the basic flow, the basic skeleton, and have that in place just so you don't go off the rails. But at the same time, you want to give enough breathing room, so if you get new ideas for story threads, subplots, other characters that come up during the creation of the story, you want to be able to give yourself enough space to add that. And so I've come to the point where I do that exactly. I have a core that I do outline, but I don't outline in such detail that I can't maneuver, and I can't add some new things, new threads, new subplots, new characters. So for me, I would say I land in the middle, almost the middle between a pure plotter and a pure pantser, and that works really well for me. And and as I always said, there's no right answer. It's different for different authors, and so I'm not it's not bad to be one or the other, even extreme, but for me that's my approach. Holly?
So you don't know what color socks Johnny's going to have on in chapter 13, do you?
Not necessarily. I leave some of that stuff open. But if I do say what color socks they have, I better get it right in the next book and have that in my outline notes somewhere.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, for a series,
notes.
It helps. It does help. It does to have a certain amount of outlining. Yeah, I mean, especially
that is
when
my thought behind it.
Yeah.
I do a minimal outline of what I need, where I'm going and stuff, and then I direct my story toward that ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there, I don't, you know, I know people that have, you know, a 200-page book and a 100-page outline for it. You know,
mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you
some
know,
people,
I
you know,
do,
they got a everything, man. They have it all mapped out.
Yeah, I mean, in great, great detail. And
yeah,
and that's fine. I mean, if it works for them, more power to them. I mean, for me, what that would do is, you know, I tend to get new ideas when I'm in the process. I mean, and when that inspiration comes, I like the room to be able to add things in. And that's kind of why I've developed the way I have. And I do the same thing when I screenwrite. I do need to have a little bit of outlining structure, but then going from that, you know, I let some things flow with character and dialogue and so forth on a screenplay, just so that, you know, I don't pass up things that might hit me that I didn't think of before as I get into it.
Kenzie said it
me.
Sounds like Daniel and her are on the same wavelength, and I say that's scary.
That is scary.
Oh, man. And Trevor Hutchison says hello, but he can't get the chat room, so he messaged me on Facebook Messenger, but he wanted to say hello to everyone that he is listening.
Well, tell him to call on in.
Yeah.
Yeah, there
call
you go.
On in.
Make sure you have Flash Player enabled, Adobe Flash Player enabled. For the chat room, that's one stumbling block that occurs with some people in the chat room. Just make sure you got that. Sometimes it's a simple right click when you go to the chat room page, but make sure. Ah,
David Sheridan.
Plancer.
Wait, you see David?
Kenzie Michaels has a term, a plancer. That's awesome.
Oh, I know, but David says he knows the beginning and the end, but the cast tells him the story.
Yep.
Yeah.
But for y'all that, you know, that want to call in and talk to us about this tonight, call in to 619-639-4616 so that
we got our first caller
hear your voices
tonight.
On there, maybe too.
We looks like I'm guessing this is Will Hutcherson by the phone number.
That's it.
Yeah,
hey, Will.
Howdy, howdy. How's everybody doing tonight?
Well, we're doing all right.
Wild.
We're doing all right. So you a plotter or are you a pantser?
Okay, so I'd say I'm a plotting pantser.
There you go.
I have, for the piece that I'm working on, I have most of the story all up in my head. I don't have it written down anywhere, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I just write it as it comes to me. As soon as I figure out how to get it into words.
Well, you could have, hey, Daniel, you could have a plodding panzer. You could have a very slow German tank.
Oh dear! Here we go with the tank.
Good
I'm on a punny night, Will. You have to forgive me.
we're not taking the tank out for a drive, even though it is snowy and everything out there.
It would be fun.
I'd be king of Kentucky right now.
That's true.
Be warned, Will. I'm punny tonight. Be warned.
I'm living in Bevan's house. What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
I never want he's not in.
Yeah. Well, Kenzie says that she loves – Kenzie said she loves to hear the story – or she loves the stories that write themselves.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you can get a story that will write itself, you're in good shape.
Yeah, it's less work for you.
That's it. I'm like Will, though.
Yeah,
I got stuff up in my head, but I don't have it down yet. And I know where I'm going with it, but I don't know the middle. I'm going to let it come as, you know, I'm writing it. I know where I'm starting, and I know how I'm ending. But I'm going to let the middle just develop. And then, you know, then make an outline. Like Steven says, you got to keep track, you know. I'll make an outline after, you know, I'm in on it.
Well, figuring that out several... for this one in particular that I'm working on was easy. Where to begin and where to end. This guy's whole
mm-hmm.
life, so from like the time he's 22
yeah.
to the time he died.
So you just have to fill
easy.
In the meat. Right, right.
Yep.
You know where it's going.
I even
it's
know
just
how
from A to B.
The best part.
Right, right. That's what I said. You let the
yeah.
characters talk to you, and it comes to you as you go.
And, you know,
and
I even know how the circumstances are created for how he dies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's how much of it I've got planned out. But I just can't get it down.
It'll come.
It'll come.
It'll
well,
come.
I say that
it'll
any
come.
Good idea, you know, doesn't have to
two.
Be written down. That it'll, you know, it'll stay with you. But in my brain and everything, I write things down when they come to me because it may be a great idea, and then, you know, 5 seconds later, I can't remember what that great idea was. So,
that's like
I mean,
me.
Well,
yeah,
well,
I have to write everything down.
Well, that's a good thing to mention because I keep a concurrent note file with me when I'm working on a new book, and that note file is just for that book. And that's precisely for moments like that where something will hit me and I'll make sure I get it down. I may not deploy it yet in the story, but I do get it down. And so not only do I have like a note file with, you know, various plot ideas and things like that in general, but for each individual book that I do, I also keep a specific note file for that book for situations like that. And also for things that I have to accomplish in each book. And I think that's more important for a series writer, just so that you know what goals that you need to do for that volume or what things you do need to get across in the plot for that particular volume. Because, you know, your book two has got to set up things for book three, and, you know, you might plant seeds in book one that don't show up till book four. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of dynamics that go on, and yeah, so that in that case, I think that's where, you know, some of the plotting does come in very handy, especially when you're a series writer.
Robert
yep.
Jordan was notorious for that.
Who did?
Robert Jordan, author of the Wheel of Time series.
Yeah.
He was notorious
mm-hmm.
for having things appear in one book and then not being brought up until five books later. Why
yep, planning
seeds.
Yep.
All 800-page novels.
And that's something that, you know, you have to keep in mind for talking with your editors about, because sometimes the editor might go, oh, this is an odd thing to have, you know, in your plot structure, or this is out of place, or this is that. You know, if you are setting something up for book three or four, that's where good communication with an editor is very important, because you have to point out that, okay, here's what I'm doing, here's why I have this, this is why, you know, this is there and might seem out of place now, but when we get to book three, boom, you know, the payout's there.
So,
and that's a big thing.
So, Mr. Jordan's editor was so on point that he was able to finish the last four books for him.
Right.
If you recall, he died around book
mm-hmm.
10.
Yeah, and Sanderson did a masterful job of helping to complete that series. I mean, that Brandon Sanderson, that was... Yeah, and I know
he's
exactly.
Got a good club of his own as well.
Yeah.
Well, Tolkien,
oh, yeah.
They did the same thing with him.
Pretty great, too.
His son finished a lot of his work, Tolkien's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, Christopher
yep.
Tolkien, who, oddly enough, is still alive. He published all the notes, finished the Silmarillion, that kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor has a question, guys, when you're ready.
We're ready.
He said, you ready? He's saying he wrote. Huh?
Go.
Oh, okay. He said he wrote songs in a band, and it was often just an idea that came to him individually, but always came to completeness after collaboration with the rest of the band. Do you think it's a good idea for authors in a circle to do so as well? So that would be like,
yeah.
you know, asking
you
our tribe, you know,
first?
Collaborating. Huh?
Daniel? What are your thoughts on that, Daniel Honey?
I think that it is a good idea to bring up ideas, because even if me and Stephen and Will and you know, all of us had the exact same idea, but we wrote stories about it, none of those stories would be the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't have to worry about anybody stealing your ideas if that's a problem that they're thinking about, because most people don't want to do that much work. And the thing about it is they can't steal your stories, because your stories, unless you've given them the whole book, you know, written out or something like that, they can't steal your stories, because your stories are still in your head. You know, I'm working on, you know, a series of different books and everything that, you know, I could tell people, you know, the basic storylines on them and everything, and they could write a book about it, but it still wouldn't be my story. So,
right.
But they can also give me assistance. Like when I was writing Knife's Tale, the writers group that I was a member of told me that I didn't make it, you know, I didn't make him nasty enough, basically. And I went back and rewrote it and wrote it realistically the way I wanted to start with, without trying to be that person that, you know, was going to make it a YA book, or, you know, a book that anybody could read, that, you know, I didn't worry about it anymore, because I had been given permission to jump off the cliff with this book. And
right. I never figured whoever the Ripper was to be a nasty individual. I mean,
well,
nasty and
he's
active,
charming,
maybe.
You know. Right.
But
well,
right,
what I mean by that is, you know, he had an undertone about him, you know,
yeah.
And especially like in my book, he's got an undertone about him to where he thinks he's better than other people around him. Mm-hmm. And he sort of looks down on other people, even though he may not say it to them.
Mm-hmm.
He still has that feeling inside that, you know, he is great. And he's going to prove how great he is. And that comes basically from the taunting of the police and different things like that in the regular notes and stuff like that that he did. You know, he thought that he was better than the police because, you know, here I am, catch me. That, you know, catch me if you can.
If you don't mind my asking, what is his occupation, if he has one, in your book? Because
in my book,
I'm not going to get to it anytime soon.
In my book, you know, he's a doctor in the book, so I went that route with it. So
that's a good route. It lines up with a lot of the legend.
He's actually a female gynecologist in the book.
Makes sense.
So.
Given the surgical nature of his first few murders.
You can have any idea and share it with, you know, people that you feel competent will assist you over somebody that's going to sit there and go, you know, oh, that's a stupid idea. You know, you know, it may be a stupid idea when they hear it, but it may turn out to be the most wonderful book that you ever read.
Right.
Yeah.
That's me,
yeah,
to
that's where you,
half
you
the
know,
time.
So we're finding the right kind of writer's group comes in, you know, the ones that are constructively critical as opposed to just critical. So.
Right.
You know, we know we've talked about that a little bit in the show before, but that's definitely the key. And I don't think there's any problem with sharing, you know, ideas like that and bouncing, you know, things like that off of a good sounding board and seeing what, you know, resonates and what doesn't. I think that can be a healthy thing. But sometimes, just take that chance and go for it.
Well, sometimes you get stuck.
Have.
You really get stuck on something, and those people in your tribe that you trust, you know, you can talk to them about it, and they open your eyes, and I mean, it might not be exactly their idea, but just talking to them, and then a light bulb goes on, you're like, oh, I can go this way with my story, you know. So-and-so can do this or that, or, you know, it'll actually come to you just by sitting and having discussion with them.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, you know, when you're talking to somebody else, you're not looking for an answer. Just talking it out gives you the answer.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. And that's what,
you know,
Kinsey Michaels, she calls it, she said they call it plot trampolining. Her a critique partner, when she gets stuck, yeah, she says they bounce ideas off of each other, and they call it plot trampolining.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This past Sunday, I engaged with a group that I know, Holly, you and Steven are familiar with. I went down to my local library and engaged with their writers' forum.
Oh, they're so cool. Oh, I love those people.
Just, it was just about, it was four others, including Michael, the guy that organizes it, including me. And it was three older folks. I'm sure they were there when you all made your appearance. And I want to say, she looked about in her mid to late 20s.
Yeah, I remember somebody about that age, yeah.
Yeah.
Just about every looked like she had just about every hyperactive psychological disorder you can think of. And I was like, it was so hard for me to just, the only thing I could think was, oh, honey. I appreciate that you're trying, just like me. But.
It wasn't for you.
No,
you've got to find.
It's great on me sometimes, but
right.
I did what people. Do.
You still with us, Will?
He's there. Is he there? Uh-oh, I don't know if he got disconnected.
I think you got disconnected. But, yeah, you've got to find people, critique people or a little group, you know, that are people that you really feel comfortable with and jive with well, you know. And, yeah, it's great to sit and bounce ideas. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, when I first did knife steel and everything, I had one group that, you know, didn't understand the book at all, really, on what I was doing. And then another group that sits there and goes, yeah, you know, we like what you're doing, but you need to do this with it. And the fact that you can do that with a group and they can, you know, give you ideas to help you work with your plotting or your pantsing on whatever you're doing there, you know, if you're plotting out something and you plotted it out wrong according to a bunch of people that, you know, do not mean you harm, then you may need to look back at it and say, you know, what do I need to change about this? And,
right.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that way, you know, you've got to, if you do it early enough in the book, then you're not wasting, you know, all the time to do it. Unfortunately for mine, I had written about 3/4 of the book when I sit there and I let them read the first 10 pages. It went back and rewrote 3/4 of the book again. but, you know, it's, but that is part of it. You know, if you've got a plot down that you can work with, like me and Steven, we, you know, I probably do less plotting than Steven does on it, because the only thing I plot about is, you know, who my characters are, where they came from, you know, what's the story, you know, where's the story start at, where does it end at, and maybe a few points in the middle. Other than that, you know, I'm by the pants, you know, getting the story out there. I know a lot of people that say that, you know, takes too long and everything, but for me it works. You know,
right.
And that's the whole thing about it. You know, it's what works for you.
Exactly.
You know,
there's
no
right.
If you're
or
a
wrong.
Pantser, if you're a Pantser and everything and it works for you and you don't plot anything out, you don't even know the first, you know, the main character's name until you're halfway through the book, that's up to you. But if it works
right.
for you, that's fine.
And sometimes
you
can
you
use
have,
more. I was going to say, sometimes
ahead,
you use more than one approach because I'll illustrate. When I'm doing my Raiden Valkyrie novels, I'm following one character throughout the entire novel. And so
right.
I can do something more like that where I have a few signposts along the way, an idea of beginning and end, and, you know, some character ideas and things like that. When I get into something like Rising Dawn Saga book or Fires and Eden book where I have – 8 or 9 plot threads going on, like kind of like the George R. R. Martin books are written, where I'm following like
mm-hmm.
you know several characters, several plot, several threads, and it's a more complex kind of structure. I'll find myself, yeah, there I'm having to put more stuff in my skeleton, to get me through from point A to B, beginning to end, and with all the setups and payouts of things that were in earlier books or, you know, things that are going to come in later books, that'll be a little more intensive on the plotting side than when I'm just following a single character kind of narrative. So sometimes, you know, yeah, when you find, you actually will find that you may tilt a little bit more one way or the other, depending on just what kind of book you're doing. So it's okay to
the
be
content,
flexible and
right.
do different, you know, use a different approach for different kinds of works. So I think that's something I do.
Let me ask you a question, Stephen. When you're doing your plotting, do you feel like you have to do more plotting if you're doing a third person, first person, or what?
Well, all my stuff is written in third person. I just like the ability to, you know, get kind of have that little bit of that supreme kind of view of everything that's going on, and so I tend to always I've always written my stuff from a third person kind of approach. So I couldn't exactly answer that for a first person kind of narrative, but in third person, yes, I plot more when I'm doing multiple threads. I find myself plotting a lot more than I do when I'm like just doing like a Raiden Valkyrie novel where I'm following one character all the way through the book. So. That might give a little bit of the answer.
Okay, that gives me a little bit of the answer. I write mainly in first person, so you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people
back,
don't like first person writing, but that is the way I do. And
yeah, I'm turning Will back on here. He dialed back in here.
Yeah, try again.
You back with us, Will?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Welcome
yeah,
back,
gotcha,
Will.
I have no idea what happened. That was weird.
It's so weird. So weird. Trevor asked, Stephen, something like your Hellscape books, does that come together real fast as if you're in a zone for that genre? Does that come together
yes.
real fast?
Oh, Lord, yes. Yeah, when I it's hilarious. I mean, I'll think of the entire, set of stories for one of those volumes, like bing, 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 bing. You know, I'll think of a main character, a theme, a setting for a hellscape for that particular story, and bang, you know, I'll have it. And I'll have, it'll come together very fast as far as the ideas for each of the short stories in the collection. And in each of the volumes, if you notice, the first and last stories have a little bit of a book into them that kind of connect, and even though they're all standalone. There still is a little connecting element between the beginning and the end story, and all that will occur pretty quickly. And then when I get in the meat of it, yeah, that's a lot of fun. And when I do a Hellscapes volume, they do flow fast because I usually am, you know, if you read the stories and know kind of the themes that I address in them. I mean, they're things that really get under my skin when in the world. So I tend to, it's my way of venting a lot. My
hellscape. Yeah. He'll see something. He'll be like, well, that's going to be a hellscape. Yeah. That's going to end up my next hellscape.
Yeah. It's my way.
So people watch out. You don't want
to
end up in
this
next hellscape.
Yeah.
It's like pretty easy when we're living in one.
Yeah, when I see bad stuff in the world that really gets under my skin, yeah, it usually metaphorically turns into a hellscape story with, you know, lots of fantastical imagery. But that's why horror is great, though, because you no holds barred. You can have a lot of fun, as Daniel knows.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Daniel does, too.
I get to have fun on a daily basis on trying to figure out, you know, what I'm going to write today and where I'm going to write it at. So that is a good thing. And, you know, the storylines and stuff are things where, you know, us as authors, we have a great privilege of being able to take a story wherever we want to take it. Because, you know, nobody's there to tell us that we can't anymore.
Right.
So.
It's your story.
It's your story, yeah. And that being said and stuff, Will, did you happen to hear the question that I asked Stephen a while ago?
Maybe. Could you repeat it just in case I didn't?
When you're doing your plotting, the plotting that you do, do you find that you need to plot more on a first person, second person, or third person, or do you only write in one genre or one standard
type?
I tend to stick to second and third person simply because I like the power it gives me, because then I can take it anywhere I want.
Yeah. Oh, you can take it to where you want with the first person, man.
Yes, you can.
If I'm writing in third person, I can. It's an easy way for me to change points of view.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in my current piece that I've got going, after a certain event in the story, I then go 100 miles from where my main character is, my protagonist, and I illustrate the goings-on of one of the antagonists. You know, what he's doing to set up the next major part of the story. See what I mean?
Yep.
It's an easy way for me to world build.
Right.
Yep.
David Sheridan piped in and said that he normally doesn't like first person, but Daniel pulled it off nicely. I said I couldn't agree more. Normally I don't like first person, but I love the way Daniel has pulled that off. And there was one more thing, is that David, and Stephen, I'll address this to you since you write scripts. He said, you know, he's a pure pantser when it comes to script writing. What do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, if that works for David, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that there's anything that's a gospel truth, but the way scripts work, it depends on what you're writing for. If you're writing for something that is like, a feature film, you know, you have about a minute to a minute and a half roughly covered per page of material. So you can't get into it and suddenly have a 130-page script because it's going to obviously be a ridiculously long movie. And so, you know, so you have to have a little bit of structure so that you don't get too bogged in, you know, in generally a three-act structure. But you don't want to, you want to end up, you know, with a range where you're going to end up with a 90 or 100-minute final movie. And so that being said, things like a YouTube show or something like that has a little more leeway in time, you know, whether you're doing a short format or a longer format. I mean, yeah, I think that you can maybe go with it. And be a little bit more of a pantser, I think, effectively. It's just a matter of, you know, just what you're writing a script for. Because, you know, if it's a TV episode or film, I mean, you definitely have a certain time window target that you're aiming for. Like with Raiden Valkyrie, you know, I was hoping to God that it would end up between 50 and 55 minutes when we got done with editing, and the rough cut ended up timing for 53 minutes. So I actually did get that one on the right spot. And big shout out to Eric Jude and Kylie Jude of Frozen Creek Studios, who are right in the thick of this. I know Kylie has been working away on that one. But when she told me, that, hey, the rough cut clocked in at 53 minutes, I was like, yes. Because that does have a more specific target, but for, I know David's Creative Flame YouTube show, he's got a little flexibility, and he's got a little room to move in something like that. It doesn't have to be a set time limit for a definite like a market or something like that. I think he's got a little room to breathe as a pantser with that one. So that's my thoughts on it.
And also, when you're looking at writing a screenplay or something like that, you're looking at about every, or stage play even, you're looking about every page is 1 minute.
Yeah,
so,
roughly, yeah.
You know,
up to that's a minute,
something
to
else
a minute
that you've
got to
take in, take in consideration. You know, if you're writing one and you've got, a 200 or 300 page manuscript sitting there, then Be ready to have a series that you're going to have to do it in, because nobody's going to want to sit there and watch it for that length of time, probably.
No. Unless you're doing the director's cut of a Lord of the Rings movie, and you can get away with the fans loving that. But it's not that. Yeah, you're in trouble.
That being said, I can't watch Lord of the Rings without it being the extended editions anymore, to be fair.
Oh, I know. I'm the same way, believe me. I'm the same way, you don't want to do your screenplay and have 150 pages by the time you're done. You're trying to do a basic feature. It was like, oh boy,
yeah. I mean, the most recent Star Wars film had an hour cut from it.
Yeah,
right.
And I can't imagine that film has so many holes and problems with its pacing that I can't even imagine what necessary things they cut out in that hour. I know one of them was the third lesson. That's one that's known for a fact that was cut. If you haven't seen it, Luke agrees to teach his new protege, Rey, three lessons. In the film, we only see two of them. But they did film the third, and it ended up on the cutting room floor, which is kind of disappointing because it was actually a really interesting plot line.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Well, guys, we've only got about a minute left, so
2 minutes
if
according
got
to
anything
my clock.
New coming up,
we've got two minutes.
If Daniel, do you want to talk about your Rippercast real quick before we have to go?
On Sunday I'm doing Rippercast with the guys out of London and the United States. It'll be at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, Central Time, and 10 o'clock Eastern Time, or 3 o'clock PM if you're over in London. So
they're 5 hours ahead.
That's going to be what we're doing on Sunday morning. So if y'all want to join in and listen to what we've got to say, it's going to be on Ripper Fiction. So and I've been asked to be part of that on the Ripper Fiction part. So and thought that was a good privilege for me. If you're looking for it and you can't find it, look me up on facebook.com/ Daniel Dark Author, and I have a link to it on that page. So
awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah, that's great opportunity.
Steven, tell us,
excited.
Steven, tell us where we can find you at real quick.
Well, I'm at on Facebook at Steven Zimmer 7. The number 7, and Steven, of course, the PH. And then, if you find me on Twitter, it's SG Zimmer and StevenZimmer.com. That's where you can find me. And you find the show at Star Chamber Show on Facebook and also Star Chamber Show on Twitter. And next week is our 100th episode, so milestone coming up next Wednesday, so get ready.
Sure is. So we and got, also be it, sure to look up yep. Seven Star Press and Seven Star Productions.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. That is the other place yes. that you can find me and Stephen both, so.
Well, we've reached the end of the episode, so, yeah, definitely loved it, Daniel.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, everybody.
Y'all have a great night.
Good night.
Everybody have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.